The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
I will have to tell you, in all my years of doing radio, the one thing that I'm really, really good at is I can understand seconds. I understand 30 seconds. I understand 60 seconds. I understand 15 seconds. I understand how much time is. It's just something that kind of gets embedded in you. Like, you know how many things you can do in a minute. And just before Ron hit that, you hit that open, I took a bite of toast for breakfast. And I had two choices. I could spit it out knowing that the mic was going to be turned on, or I could chew it in a way to devour the piece of toast quickly enough. And I realized I had enough time to devour the toast and to continue on. It's always impressive. It's one of the few things I know how to do well is eat food fast. It's not a trait that's going to win me any contests, or it's not going to put me in the cave when the meteor comes. But nevertheless, it's a good trait to have.
Yeah, I equate it to chefs knowing when a steak is done without having to look inside of it.
I don't understand how they still
just go,
do that.
They can just go and they touch it, and it's like, oh, that's not ready yet.
Oh, by the way, I've heard that if you take your thumb and your finger and you press your finger and then touch the kind of the pad of your hand, and then you go, that's rare. And then if you touch the second finger, it's medium rare. And if you touch the third finger, I heard that's how they do it. But I have no idea. I grill steaks at home, and my wife likes hers a particular way. And I always get nervous that I'm overcooking it or whatever. And I have not gotten that feel yet. I like mine medium rare. So, hey, man, if it just gets on there and gets some heat, flip it over a couple times, I'm usually good. So I don't really worry about me. My son likes it the same way. But if you like yours medium well, but not well, I'm not the guy to go to, because I'll either overcook it or undercook it. I've never been able to hit that magic mark of steak temperature.
Medium well.
I know. Who wants a steak medium well? It's insane.
I will say this. I do like my burgers medium well. Because
I will do that too.
I usually order it that way because then I get it medium rare.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
Or medium.
That's right. You ever go to a burger place where they don't ask you the temperature because it's all going to come out exactly the same anyway? Exactly. Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. All right, we're going to talk some NFL again with Rob Gronkowski's retirement. We'll have that coming up later in the show as well. We're going to talk about his impact from the Patriots. Will he come back if Brady calls? We'll also get into some Major League Baseball. I want to get back into the NCAA tournament with the Sweet 16 coming up on Thursday. So where do we stand in terms of all of these favorites coming up next?
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I was telling you this yesterday. I'm okay with this tournament being very top-heavy, very chalky. I'm very fine with that. I'm not one of those big Cinderella, can't wait to watch them go all the way to the Final Four type of basketball fan. I like the matchups that we got. Are your credit card bills stressing you out? Call the credit card debt hotline today and learn how to reduce your payments to a fraction of what you owe. Call now for free advice, 800-514-9886, 800-514-9886. That's 800-514-9886. And the reason I'd say this is because, listen, we're getting some really good games, all right? Purdue is one of the top teams in the Big Ten. They're going up against Tennessee, one of the top teams in the SEC. Texas Tech has had a fantastic year all year long, going up against John Beilein's Michigan Wolverines, who've been in the finals back-to-back seasons. Oregon and Virginia in the Ducks are probably the biggest surprise of the tournament. But even there, you know, they won the Pac-12 tournament, so God love them. I mean, Florida State, Gonzaga, I like the Noles. I don't know if I like them that much to beat a Gonzaga Bulldogs team, but they're better than anybody else that could have been popped up onto that bracket line. You know, Kentucky, Houston, I'm big on. I mean, I'm big on Auburn and North Carolina. I think Auburn's playing some of the best basketball of the season right now. They've won 10 in a row going up against a Tar Heels team. These are good, good matchups. Does it lack the sexiness of having a fun team that we've never heard of or not really paid attention to in the Sweet 16? Yes, but the trade-off is you get these brackets, and I don't think the tournament is boring because of it. I don't think it's less than because of it. And I think we need to look at it. We need to look at this tournament. We've always said it's the best tournament in sports because it's different. So many teams, one and done. We go from 64 to four in, you know, 2 weeks, right? That, and then we finish it out. And so it's a 3-week tournament and we reduce it down to one champion in a short amount of time because of the kind of the nature of this tournament. But it isn't the best way to crown a champion. Well, now you have 16 teams and pretty much all the way down to about 12, you can legitimately see winning this thing. And maybe 10. That you can legitimately see winning this thing. I might be stretching on a couple. But if you would not be surprised if Auburn cut down the nets. You would not be surprised if Michigan State, a 2-seed, did, or Duke, or Virginia Tech, even for that matter. If some of these teams get hot at the right time, you wouldn't be overly shocked. The one thing that I've always concerned myself, and Shelby Mass talked about this yesterday, the one thing I've always been a little wary about when we have that fun Cinderella team kind of invading the territory of a Sweet 16 or even an Elite Eight, and sometimes, for that matter, even a Final Four, some of the teams just lose focus enough to get exploited, right? And what I mean is losing the game and not being the kind of competition that you would have gotten on the next level. Now, that's no fault of their own, and I'm not taking away those moments, those Cinderella moments, saying, oh, it would have been better had those upsets not happened. Part of the charm of this tournament is the upsets. But I remember Florida playing George Mason in the Final Four, and it wasn't as fun as Florida playing UConn in the Final Four. Right? When you play some of these teams, I mean, how many of you go, well, you know, eventually the clock does strike midnight, and when it does, it makes an easy path for one of these tougher teams. Nobody has a real easy path here. All right? I think Duke is going to play Virginia Tech, and I think the Hokies are going to play them tough. I think Duke wins the game, but that's not an easy game for Duke. They're playing an opponent in their own conference who knows them particularly well. Right? Even Oregon has a potential to get hot and make a noise against Virginia. Even though they're a 12 seed. They're not a typical 12 seed. So looking at the brackets, I'm finding these games where these are going to be good. Now, if you had replaced any of these teams with a 13 seed, like a UC Irvine or something, yeah, the story would be fun. The story would be interesting. But let's say UC Irvine gets caught up in the moment of being the Sweet 16, and the score is 31-10 midway through the first half. Right? That's what sometimes happens, and that's something I can live without. I can sacrifice the week of hype if you give me a good basketball game. Now, that doesn't always mean that the Cinderellas don't produce a good basketball game. Loyola Chicago made it all the way to the Final Four and had a great time doing it. You know? I mean, that was a fun story. And I think that is one of the stories that the NCAA tournament likes to promote. Whole Sister Jean, that team in general. You know, we went to the campus, saw the kids celebrating, and it was kind of fun. And they won and battled all of their way to the finals, to the Final Four. Good story. But doesn't always end up like that. So I'm just saying, look, I don't find these games, I don't find these Sweet 16 matchups, I don't find them less interesting because we don't have a Cinderella. I think Cinderella is a flavor. It's not part of the course, as I was saying yesterday. That being said, Ron in Houston, are people, is Cougar Fever a thing, or is that such a, it's not a city school, it's more like a side school?
No, it's actually a thing here.
It's a big thing,
people,
okay?
People are really excited because,
that's good.
Let's face it, Houston hasn't been relevant since was the Five Slamma Jamma days.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, this is, I mean, it's actually a big deal that they're in the Sweet 16.
My you can favorite, at me, by the way, you can at me at Tony D Radio on Twitter if I'm missing a year in which they were awesome. And I totally forgot.
I don't think there is one.
Like 1996, they went all the way to, I have no idea.
No.
I wouldn't remember.
No, but I loved was a longtime sports writer here in the city, Brian Taggart of the Houston Chronicle. He mentioned something that was like, you know, Houston in the Sweet 16. I haven't tweeted that since 1984. Absolutely loved it. I was like, that is perfect because you're gonna have someone reading that going, wow, he hasn't tweeted that since 1984?
That's a good writer. That's a good writer. That's a quip. That is good stuff.
Yep.
I think they could beat Kentucky.
I think so, too.
That's not a surprise because they're a three seed, so this is not an upset or anything like that. They're as good as any team in the country. But
it kind of feels like an upset because
it's
Houston.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
Has no business being in the Sweet 16, like of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Kentucky, right. I mean, you know, God, Kentucky games are being showed during a wedding.
Kentucky fans.
Kentucky fan is a ravenous fan.
I'm going to be interested. For the people who cover Houston, who don't cover, like just cover Houston, they don't cover the tournament or they don't cover anything else. When they get to Kansas City, I would love to see people's first time reaction to Big Blue Nation when they see them for the first time, because it is a sight. I mean, they really are amazing. I got to give them all the credit in the world. They are really amazing. My brother went to Kentucky, so I always kind of jab him about his school, but I always tell him, I said, it is phenomenal watching that team travel. I remember Kentucky got put in Boise, and they made their way to Boise. They flooded Boise, Idaho, to see the Cats play. And, you know, Kansas City is not that bad of a drive. They'll boogie on over there.
And I feel terrible because I should know where Houston's playing next. But where are they playing?
Kansas City. Sprint Center.
Yeah, so I mean,
Sprint Center.
Oh, that's easy, Kentucky.
Yeah, so Kentucky
that's a day trip for Kentucky.
I always
fan.
Wonder though, like how. Listen, I had this issue in the ACC, the AFC Championship game in 2006, I should say. The Broncos were facing the Steelers, and when I went to the game, you know, I knew the Steelers traveled well, right? I knew the Steelers traveled really, really, really well, but I was blown away how they got their hands on tickets because Bronco fans are very loyal. And Bronco fans are very passionate. They're not a passive fan base. And if they had their hands on AFC title game tickets, they would not have sold them to Steeler fans. And yet somehow the Steeler fans found their tickets. They found these tickets to go and make a strong presence. Bronco fans still say, I remember those towels. They were waving in our house. I couldn't believe it. For a playoff game, they were waving towels in our house. And I don't know how Kentucky fans get more of the tickets than like the other game that's going to be there is Auburn and North Carolina. How do they get more of the tickets? How do they feel like they do over Tar Heels and Auburn? My prediction is going to feel like Kansas City is going to be very Kentucky centric, but in reality, it shouldn't. Auburn fans are passionate. They should buy the tickets. North Carolina fans are crazy nuts. They should get those tickets. Yet Kentucky will find their ways to get a hand on. They'll find a way to get their hands on.
Well, see, I would say Auburn fan is passionate, but are they passionate towards basketball?
That's a good question. That's a legit
question.
Because,
I mean, to me, Auburn basketball feels like Alabama basketball. Like Alabama, I mean, they had a really decent team last year. And it was like, okay, you know, Alabama, you know, is it because football is kind of generating interest in your school, so people are wanting to go? And then I don't think Alabama even did anything this season.
Yeah, no, Alabama went to the NIT, was out of the first round. They just fired their coach, Avery Johnson, after 2 years. Remember, Avery Johnson was in the NBA, coaching the NBA. He went to Alabama 4 years, took over for Anthony Grant.
There's no job safe anymore.
No, exactly. He went to one tournament. Here's the deal. He went to one tournament in the 4 years in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they fired him. where basketball is secondary to the to Nick Saban in football, and they should have been like, oh, we still have Avery Johnson. He's pretty decent. But they look down at Auburn and Bruce Pearl, and they're like, no, we can't have this. So, no, I absolutely get it. The weird thing, and the only thing that I can equate that to is, and well, I should say Tennessee basketball has been pretty decent over the last couple of years, but the local talk here in Nashville is no one's paying attention to spring football in Tennessee. Right? And like, that's surprising. Like, I don't know when the spring game is scheduled, but it should be pretty soon. But nobody's talking about spring football in Tennessee, and they should be Jeremy Pruitt's second year, and they should, but they're not because the Volunteers are dominating the landscape. So maybe Auburn is like, you know what? We're catching Tiger fever in the tournament and let's go. Cause this is the one thing. It's one thing to be in and out of a team for the regular season, but it is another to be like, oh, let's just catch the bandwagon tournament team and ride this to the end. Right. Let's take this to the next level. You know, so maybe that's the case. But North Carolina fans should be eating these tickets alive at the Sprint Center. And I wonder if Kentucky will outdraw them. I wonder how many people will go from Houston to go up there and see the Cougars play. But Big Blue Nation is no joke. I don't know how they do it. And they'll go without tickets. They'll go just for the party. I met plenty of Kentucky fans outside of the SEC tournament that didn't even have tickets, that wanted to see if they could get tickets, but just wanted to be in town for it. And just be around it and be celebrating it. So I wonder if that's going to go down too. Who knows? All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D Radio. You can also hit Ron up at Ron Culver. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Mike Petraglia is going to join us. Patriots CLSN is going to join us. Talk Rob Gronkowski and the retirement. Does Rob Gronkowski go down as one of the greatest Patriots of all time? I would say so, yes. He's going to go down as one of the great tight ends of all time. He would probably put him on the category of Patriots, but that also encompasses defensive linemen, offensive linemen, obviously quarterback, running backs, and whatnot. But we'll ask Mike Petraglia, how is that going? I want to know if it's actually a surprise. I doubt it, because remember, Rob Gronkowski retirement talk has been a thing for a while. It was already pegged after the Super Bowl that people were thinking about it. But when it actually happens is when you get the emotion, right? You can always say like, oh, I'm not. It's like when you have, it's kind of like when you have a dog or a pet that's like nearing really old age. And then you're like, oh, eventually this dog's going to go. And then they do go. It still doesn't change the shock of it, right? It still doesn't change the moment of it. Rob Gronkowski, retirement. Then it finally happens. I'm sure there's a different emotion than thinking, well, one day it's going to happen. So we'll talk to him about that and whether or not he thinks Rob Gronkowski will come back if Tom Brady comes a-calling. Did you see the Yusuf Nurkic injury from last night in the NBA? On that, his leg injury buckling out from under him? Don't watch it if you haven't seen it. Don't watch it if you're queasy.
See, it's, you know, awful. You brought it up. Now I got to go run and it. See it. Yeah. I got to watch it. It's just like there's this viral video going around of this these two college, it looks like I'm going to say college kids, arm wrestling, and you can clearly hear the snap.
Oh, God, no.
And I mean, but it's not gruesome looking, but I mean, you hear it and you're just like, oh, God, that must have hurt. But now, like, I got to see it.
Yeah, it was a bad injury.
I saw highlights. I saw somebody being wheeled off on a stretcher, and I was just like, nah, I don't really want to know the story, because if I don't know the story, then I don't have a vesting interest in it. But now you told me.
He called the Terry Stotts, who's the head coach of the Blazers, called the injury devastating. What level of an injury would you say it was devastating? And he doesn't mean like, oh, this could hurt our playoff hopes. I mean, like, for this guy, this industry is compound leg fractures. When you're a big guy and you're tall and you're big, like when you jump and leap, it is not, I mean, his leg went twisting in different directions, and the Brooklyn Nets players that were near it walked away immediately and were like, that's enough. I don't want to see it. Like, it makes you cringe. He's screaming in pain. Like, people are just like praying, like on their knees praying for him at the moment. I mean, he didn't get shot. He just broke his leg in a couple of places. But the Nets players and the players had to turn and run. It was so gruesome. They had to turn and run from the injury. Very similar to like Theismann Lawrence Taylor jumped up.
I got a gripe about this real quick. I just watched it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I understand that it's gross and everything, and it's gruesome injury.
The guy's on the ground.
But dude, everyone left him. He is alone in the paint.
Yeah, they're like, somebody's gonna come out here for him, right? Because it ain't gonna be right here.
There is
ain't
gonna be me. 5 feet of him, 10 feet of him. They're like, oh, you know what? You're on your own, bud. Crawl out of the arena.
Could you stabilize him until we can get the stretcher? Nah, he's good, right? He's good. No, we really need you. Like, could you hold the leg together? We're going to bring the stretcher out. Nah. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. I'm heading to the locker room. Yeah, no, that's true. You watch the video. They sprint from him. They clear out from him. And the worst is when they take the jerseys and they put it over their nose and mouth to prevent them from being disgusted by what they're seeing.
Does it protect him from the smell of it all? I mean, what it reminded me of was in junior high. I remember this kid in junior high broke some wind, and the whole crowd just moved away from him, and he sat in the middle giggling. That's what it looked like.
That's what it looks like. Oh, God.
Everyone's like, they're like screaming, Joseph, you all right? Just walk it off, man.
God.
Just drop some dirt on it. You'll be okay. We'll be over here.
Oh, the Blazers have been surging, too. They've been taking off. This is going to be a bad injury, but this is one of the...
Well, it's a devastating injury, Tony.
Yeah, that's what Terry Stotts said. Devastating. This is when you get a medical guy on, and you're like, what does this... I mean, well, what happened is the bone was cracked in two different locations, and they both went in opposite directions. No! But seriously, these big guys, when they jump and land, it's amazing. It's... God, I don't even want to.
Yeah.
I'm cringing just talking about
it. I know. I mean, it's bad. I still don't say it's Sean Livingston bad, though.
No, that's true. Might be true. What was it,
Sean Livingston, where his leg literally folded in half?
Yeah. That's. I think it was, yeah.
I think it was Sean Livingston.
That was Sean Livingston. But, there's been a couple of those where you're just like, yikes. I remember when I was in college, the starting quarterback of our football team, Todd Ellis, who is the play-by-play announcer of the Gamecocks now, he suffered an injury. And I had really good seats for that game, too. And I was like 10 rows up. And I heard him yell, like scream, not scream, but like yell in pain from where I was sitting. And it was standing because we all stood up for the games. And I remember thinking, oh, that's not good. That is not good. And they brought out the ambulance and stretcher, and they got him done. And he was out. That was it. He never played again. That was it. He became a lawyer, and then later he got into broadcasting. But I think he's still a lawyer and does the broadcasting on the side. But that was it. He got healed, and he had a little cup of coffee. Like, he went to go work out with the Broncos. But he was one of those type of quarterbacks, too, that he probably wouldn't have been a star in the NFL, but he had the size and the ability to probably have done something. You know, maybe a backup. You know, just gotten a deal from somebody. He could play the position. I don't think he was ever going to be a star. But that was taken away.
Clipboard.
Yeah.
Probably could have held a clipboard
for $500,000 a year. So, but it was done. That was it. It was finished. But I also remember that year, because I was a freshman, we were all jazzed up for the Clemson game, because Clemson was at home. They were all fired up and screaming and hollering and whatnot. And Dickie DeMacy was the new quarterback. And I always liked that name because it was weird. But anyway, Ellis came out. They have a band tunnel that comes out of the locker room, and they play 2001, A Space Odyssey. And the team runs through the tunnel. But the band had formed. The cheerleaders were all lined up. And because that was it. Like, that was it for him. It was his senior year. That was it. They let him walk by himself. He had crutches. And they let him walk out by himself. And the place went bananas. Like, bananas. They were cheering for him. Poor kid. And I thought, oh, wow. And later, I caught up with him later, and I remember telling him that. I remember telling him that story. I was like, I was a freshman when you got hurt your senior year. And he's like, oh, yeah. I was like, I don't know why I'm telling you this. It seems a very inappropriate thing to be telling you right now.
Yeah, but I remember seeing you get hurt. Painful experience of your life. I'm going to use that as common ground.
Luckily, we shared. The one reason I could do that is luckily, and this is how I give you advice on this. Whenever you want to talk to somebody like in that way, if you share a mutual friend, especially if that friend's female, it works out well. I was friends with this girl's brother in school. That's how I ended up in South Carolina in the first place. And she was really good friends with him. So years later, when I finally met him, I said, oh, do you remember so-and-so? And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember. So I said, I went to school with her brother. She's from my town. And he was like, oh, okay. So we had a conversation. We talked about Gamecocks. And then when I brought up, I said, yeah, I was sitting at the 40-yard line when your life basically came to an end, when your football life came to an end. Man, these injuries are bad, dude. Like you don't know. Like, you watch Nurkic's injury. You don't know. You may never recover from that. Like, you may never be the same. Like, it's a compound leg fracture. He may never be the same player. But, man, that's really tough. Some of these guys, man, they land on those things. It snaps, snap, crackle, pop. Carted off the floor. Mm. I just don't know.
Yeah. But just don't look to your teammates for help, apparently.
Yeah, and don't send a tweet. We lost a guy to an injury, but we gained another guy in G League signing. You know, don't do that. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. You lost Nurkic. It's a very, very tough injury. All right, Mike Bacaglia joins us from Boston. We'll talk Patriots and what the reaction is in New England to the retirement of Rob Gronkowski. What do the Patriots do next? And could he come back to play for Brady one more time? Next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, suffering from knee or back pain, call 800-608-1881. That's 800-608-1881. Learn how to live comfortably nearby invisible brace that can help solve your pain. 90% satisfaction rating, 800-608-1881, 800-608-1881. All right, Mike Petraglia was set to get him aboard to talk about Ron Gronkowski in the New England area. His retirement. I think he could come back and would come back if the Patriots needed him. I think there might be some football life in him yet. But this was not a shock. I mean, again, his impending retirement was always a topic of discussion. I was always curious as to when if you were in the discussion of retiring, right? If people were thinking about you retiring, you had some injuries and whatnot. In the end, when would you do it? The best time would be to do it is to win a championship. Since you don't know when you're going to win a championship, as soon as you win one, start putting the process together. But it's, he goes down as one of the greatest tight ends in the history of the game. He was without the longevity, because that, you know, Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, they had real longevity. But he was a real complete tight end. As I was saying earlier, his intelligence at the position was exceptional, right? His ability, and again, Bill Belichick said he was absolutely exceptional at the job that needed to be done at that position for a complicated Patriots offense. And Belichick described it. He could play different. So he had the tight end in their offense could be lined up in various different locations, and it was all important. And every position had a different role in what they did. And Gronkowski was great at that. And we kind of look at the thing that Gronkowski is. He's a big guy, catches passes, a really good football player, tough to bring down. But he's also like this kind of fun frat boy kid that's got this image of a party time, have a good time, Gronkowski. But don't be confused of that image compared to his football intelligence and his ability to play that position. Because his ability to play the position and his intelligence on what the position is and what he had to do was really off the charts. His ability to block in run situations, his ability to block in passing situations really made him one of the most complete tight ends in the history of the game. And that's why I would have him on top. And it would be close. I mean, I would put a Tony Gonzalez, you know, right there, right behind him. I would, you know, Shannon Sharp, I liked at that position. But I think Gronkowski's completeness of the position edges, even despite the fact that he didn't play as many games. I mean, he averaged nearly 70 yards a game for a tight end, which is really amazing. Really amazing. But not really when you think about how that offensive system utilizes him. But still, you got to make those catches. And you got to do it sometimes double teamed. And you got to do it sometimes when everybody's focused on you. Everybody knows you might be the third down guy. But what does he do now? I mean, look, does he want to get into movies? I mean, I don't know if he's a great actor or a good actor or if he's a box office draw. I mean, sometimes that works, sometimes it's not. I think a Brian Bosworth was in like a movie or two. They weren't, you know, they're rather forgettable. But would he could he do wrestling? Could he do could he be just a celebrity spokesperson because he's good at it? You know, you do wonder if he wants to be in the public eye. You've got to find another avenue because you can be you can disappear. You're always going to be a local hero, right? No matter what you do, you'll always be able to draw a signing, an appearance in the greater Boston area, and that will last forever. I mean, you go to any part of the country, and you'll see some of the older athletes making appearances at, you know, car dealerships or sports bars or wherever, write a book, et cetera. But if you want to stay relevant in the national perspective, where people are paying attention to you nationally, you got to stay in the public eye. And that may be media. That may be, you know, doing another thing like wrestling, you know, or whatever it is that he does. That's what you got to do. But I wonder if he wants that. I wonder if he'd just rather just have a good time. Made his money and have a good time. In essence, in reality, when you think about it, he's got this not perfect life because we don't really know, you know, what people's lives are, but he got in the league young. He made a ton of money in a short period of time. He saved that money. He invested that money. He lived very, you know, he didn't live extravagantly. He lived off endorsement money. He's reportedly have taken every dime he's made from the NFL and put it away. Long-term retirement, gets an NFL pension, and now at 30, 29 years old, 30, he gets to have a good time, and in 5 years, he'll get enshrined into the Hall of Fame, and he'll be one of the youngest enshrinees ever to go in there. And can you imagine what his speech is going to be like? How his speech is going to be? I mean, I can't wait to hear what he has to say about the people he's played with, the love he has for his team, his city, and just the good time nature of it all. I mean, maybe there's going to be some somber moments where he, you know, talks about some people that really meant to him that are no longer around. But I got to think a Rob Gronkowski speech, like a Rob Gronkowski speech for the Hall of Fame, would be, you know, it's really, really awesome at 35 years old to get into Canton. What he's still talking about, what's still important to him at that young age. That's the stuff that, I mean, this. I've always had respect for him. I rooted against him most of the time he played, but for the most part, I always respected him from a, I like the fact that he is what he was. You know, he wasn't apologetic. We seem to embrace him in that role of like fun party guy, drinking party bus, party boat, you know, kind of personality. We didn't really shame him for that. Right. If you heard a story of Rod Gronkowski drinking a case of beer at a downtown bar, you know, in the middle of the summer, it wouldn't bother you. If just like here's the Gronk party cruise. Right. It didn't really bother a lot of people. We sort of embraced that. He was having a good time. He wasn't in the news for the wrong reason. He didn't say super controversial things. He didn't get himself into trouble. He wasn't arrested. He'd go and he'd dance and he'd drink. But then on Sundays, he would catch 5 passes for 115 yards and 2 touchdowns. Right? That was all you asked for of athletes. You know, Odell Beckham got criticized for being on a boat during Super Bowl week. I mean, during a playoff game, I should say, against the Packers, because there was a real concern that he wouldn't be effective. And I'm sure early in Gronk's career there was those concerns, but as the years went on, those concerns were minimized. He was who he was. Remember there was the Super Bowl in Indianapolis against the Giants. I think afterwards he was dancing at a club after the Giants had beaten the Patriots. The Patriots had lost. I remember people getting a little worked up about that. But for the most part, he stayed controversy free from that. Like he didn't get drunk and beat up a bouncer. I mean, he didn't do those kind of things. Right. And again, at me if there's a story locally that I'm missing. But you know, because as you get closer and closer to an area, the nucleus gets tighter and tighter. But nevertheless, that's what that's a completion of a 29-year-old life. Good at his job, one of the best at his job of all time, made his money, invested it well, respected enough by the people, accepted by the people, now gets to go do his thing. And go do his thing, I hope he does. But what does this mean for the Patriots? Right? I mean, listen, you can't replace him, but it doesn't mean the Patriots offense isn't, when he was hurt and he didn't play, they still continued to be productive. Just with Gronk, it was such an unbelievable advantage to draw that double team, to draw that extra defender, to have that weapon when he was in single coverage. But they'll find a tight end, and they'll put him in there, and they'll hope that he plays the position well enough. But you don't replace legends. It's not plug and play. Right? When you have a guy that's exceptional at his job, you've got to, if you want to replace him, you've got to find the guy who's as good at that as he was. And there's not going to be very many people. There's going to be people who might catch the ball better. There might be people who block a little better. I don't know. But they're not going to be the combination of both. But the offense is still going to be decent enough, or at least that's what we trust, because the Patriots are that good. Here's the quote from Belichick, and I mentioned this earlier. The tight end position, probably after quarterback, the hardest position to play on our offense. That's the guy who does all the formationing. The running back is usually in the backfield. The receivers are receivers, but tight ends could be in their tight end location. They could be in the backfield. They could be flexed. They could be in the wide position. To formation the defense, those are the guys you're going to move. Moving tight ends, it changes the defensive deployment. And Belichick said Gronkowski was exceptional at the job. That was told to SI.com, Andy Benoit or Benoit. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But nevertheless, a good piece on what the Patriots are planning to do going forward without Rob Gronkowski. 800-777-2907. And we'll come back. More thoughts on the NFL in the owners' meeting in Arizona coming up next.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so the NFL meeting this week. And if you had to make a rules change, what would you like to see? I've been saying that I think the Broncos' 4th and 15 onside kick rule would be cool to add to the NFL. I remember, they always act like these owners are so stodgy, right? Oh, they hate change. They don't like change. Remember when they backed up the extra point? That was a big deal. That was a big deal. You know why it was a big deal? Hey, Ron, when the extra point was a chip shot, did you ever sweat the fact that your team needed the extra point to tie a game late?
Never thought about it.
Never once did you think about it. If your team was down 7 in the final seconds, and your quarterback threw it in the end zone and it was caught, your immediate thought wasn't, oh boy, I hope we make that extra point to tie the game. Your thought was, this game is tied.
No, honestly, it was that. But also, as soon as they scored a touchdown, all right, I can go use the bathroom now.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well, let me game's go get, tied. Let me go to the kitchen. I've been putting off getting that glass of water. I can go get it now.
And now you got to be like, wait a minute. Hold on 1 second. Well, we got to take a field. We got to kick an extra point. That might not go through. That could be blocked. Who knows? It's a little bit of a mystery of what this could be. Now you got to sweat this one out a little bit. So the owners, when they act like, oh, this is a bunch of stodgy white men who can't make change. Well, no, they've done some changes. They've done some changes. They just got to adjust.
But 4th and 15, it seems like too much. I literally want to see it.
Me too.
That's my thing. I want to see it happen.
Me too.
Even if they don't do it, put it in the preseason just so we can kind of see what it would look like.
Yeah, I know.
On an
right?
NFL level, I mean, we can see it on the AAF, and it looks cool. It looks fun. It's like, oh, this is outstanding. But I want to see I want to see Aaron Rodgers try to do it, or Tom Brady try to do it, or Drew Brees, or name all the great quarterbacks who when their back is up against the wall can get that fourth down.
Exactly. When you need the ball back and you're down 2 scores and you need the ball back, who would you rather want to try to get you the ball back? Tom Brady or Gostkowski trying to nail one on the ground for 10 yards?
Right. And can't they make it like, dealer's choice type of thing? Like if you want to kick it, go ahead and kick it. But if you want to attempt to pass, then do the pass.
I think you can. There's no law that says you have to kick it away. So there's no rule that says you have to kick it away. So you could surprise you could throw an onside kick out there. It's just the kickoff. It has to go 10 yards. It doesn't matter how it goes 10 yards.
No matter what. But I mean, if you decide to say, I mean, you don't have to announce, hey, we're doing an onside kick.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes, I mean, late in the game, it's just kind of assumed.
It seems like a very Mike Tomlin thing to do, though. Everybody goes left, I'll go right. Yeah, Like, imagine the Steelers down 2, and you're like, oh, thank God. All right, get Ben Roethlisberger 4th and 15. What are they doing? After the game, he's like, thought we had the advantage. Thought we could catch it by surprise. Oh, no, because no onside kicks don't work, coach. They don't work. Get Ben out there throwing the ball around to Juju Smith-Schuster, who loves him completely.
That's when, you know what, I think having a world-class spinner would help.
Yeah, right?
If you have a world-class spinner, and then you teach your kicker just to pop, you know, try to kick it straight up in the air. It has to go at least 10 yards, but kick it straight up in the air and just let that guy run underneath it.
Yeah. And, you know, let's see if they make that happen. Robert Kraft, though, you'll quiet that the Arizona meetings?
I bet he's going to be.
Yeah, really, not saying a word.
No massages at the hotel for him.
God, Robert Kraft.
We do have some news.
What's the breaking news?
The Mets are in the news.
Jacob DeGrom deal?
Jacob DeGrom deal. Well, I mean, I don't think it's done, but they're planning on giving their ace a 5-year, $137.5 million extension.
And 5 years.
And DeGrom can opt out after 2022.
5 years, 130?
137.5.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out the math real quick. $16 million
a year? Yeah, it's not too bad.
$26 million a year? $16 million, $26. All right, I have to break out the stupid calculator because I can't do it. 100, would you say 137?
Yes.
And that comes out to, boom, $27 million a year. Wow, God, baseball.
Not bad. Hey, not bad when you know when you that's how you treat a Cy Young Award winner.
That's right. It went 10-9 with a 1.70 ERA.
You might not be able to get runs for him, but you can certainly get, you know, some dollars for him.
They're like, well, we got that half of the equation formulated. Now we got to make sure we got some bats in the lineup.
Well, should this calm Noah down a little bit?
Yes, Noah Syndergaard's been very, very vocal on social media that Jacob DeGrom needs to get paid. Very vocal about that.
He's just been critical about everything, Mets.
Yeah,
I don't think he's happy.
No, they nicknamed him Thor, but I don't know.
He just likes dropping the hammer.
Was Thor this whiny? I'm sorry. He should talk like Thor. He should be like, I want a deal for Jacob DeGrom. I want it now. Good for him, though. He was the one that pointed out that travel disaster. I like that. I like that because everybody else would have been like, eh, well, that's what we got to do.
Yep. 3-hour like, layover. No. Nothing we can do about it. It's like, no, there is something you can do about it. We're the Mets.
So funny. It's so funny, though. Like the level, the you want to talk about first world problems. He's like, oh, and they're making us take a bus to Sarasota where we're getting on our own plane and we have to fly to Syracuse where we're going to have to stay in a hotel and we don't even know what time we're getting in. Is the 5-star hotel even open? Will they have even room service when we get there? I don't even know. And then we have to fly the same charter jet to Washington to begin the baseball season. Oh, for the love of God. Good job, Thor.